This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here live from the MVP Studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. A few weeks ago, 24/7 Wall Street released their top 50 horror movies of all time. This list was pretty surprising because it had movies that shouldn't have been on the list and movies that were ranked too high and, well, personally, I think some ranked too low. And then there were some movies that weren't even listed. Joining me today to go over this list is Hollywood movie expert Christopher McKittrick. Thanks for joining me, Chris.
You're welcome.
Could you tell me a little bit about yourself? Like, how did you get into liking these type of movies, horror movies?
Well, as a whole, I'm a big movie buff, and I'm actually the U.S. editor for Creative Screenwriting Magazine. And some of the most effectively written movies, whether you're into them or not, are horror movies, because they could have some very simplistic plots, you know, where it's just a murderer after his or her prey, or it could have a very complicated, multi-level, mysterious sort of who's the killer, what's the reason why something is happening that's so scary. So they tend to be very versatile, where they can be very simple or very complex. And that's one thing that I really love about horror movies.
One of the movies that I remember that is Cabin in the Woods. And wasn't that kind of considered satire a little bit? Or no, was that like a full-blown horror movie?
It was definitely a mix of both. And that's another wonderful thing about horror movies is that there could be so much mixing of genres and mixing of concepts. Alien, for example, is one of the best horror movies of all time. But it's also a science fiction movie. In the case of Cabin in the Woods, what was so great about that movie and what has made it so popular is not only is it a horror movie, but it sort of examines all of the concepts of horror movies that we have come to become familiar with. And, you know, people really like that. It's very, very meta and very self-examining. And people definitely are into things that are meta because it almost brings you like you're on the inside of the joke. And so, yeah, there's definitely a lot of funny, but a lot of horror movies tend to be funny as well.
And, I'm a little curious about this. I was reading up on this, and it turns out that there's different types of blood that's used in movies. Why is that? Like, shouldn't there just be a gore standard?
That's a good question. I guess it really goes with what effect you want to use. First of all, the color is important, especially back in the days of film. The color would look different to the naked eye than it does on film. And also, you know, when it comes to some of these folks that do makeup designs and special effects, they do extraordinary things, and they want to make sure that blood and gore looks exactly the way it should. And so, as gross as it may sound, it's making sure your blood has the right consistency and things like that to make sure it's going to look as good as possible for the effect.
You know, growing up, there was so many franchises. You know, there's the Freddy Krueger's, Friday the 13th, Phantasm, and all that. It kind of feels like there isn't anymore, or am I wrong about that?
You're not wrong. There are still franchises, horror franchises. A great example is the Conjuring series just had a big hit with Annabelle Creation, but they're not as prevalent as they used to be. And even reboots of things like 2009's reboot of Friday the 13th or 2010's reboot of A Nightmare on Elm Street, even though they were financially successful, they haven't turned into franchise series. I think there's a couple of reasons for that. Number one, there's always concern about how much gas is left in the tank on these properties. A big thing that's being talked about even in non-horror films for 2017 is franchise fatigue. Pirates of the Caribbean 5 didn't do as well as the last films. The recent Alien movie didn't do as well as the last films. So there's always concern that how much is too much. And a lot of times also when it comes to original concepts, a movie like Paranormal Activity, which itself spawned a lot of sequels, that was made for a relatively small amount of money. So sometimes it may be worth the studio's time to try out a new idea at a very low cost and see if that could be box office gold.
One of the reasons why I wanted to bring you on is that there's this 50 best horror film list that 24/7 Wall Street brought out. And I wanted your take on it. There's a couple of movies on there I thought shouldn't be there and a couple of movies that were omitted. But what did you think about this list?
Yeah, I mean, I think from at the very basic form, maybe 30 of the 50 on the list have have a good place to be there. But you're absolutely right. There are some notable omissions, and even omissions that are mentioned in the opening of the article. I jotted down some really popular ones that weren't on the list. Aliens from 1986, The Blair Witch Project, which may not be everyone's favorite horror movie from 1999, but certainly a hugely influential movie. The original Friday the 13th from 1980, the original Nightmare on Elm Street in 1984, the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre from 74, Silence of the Lambs, 91, Jaws, 75. I mean, all of these movies are hugely influential horror movies, or at least movies that have very distinct horror elements, and they're not on the list. So I think a lot of horror fans would be surprised. On the flip side, as you mentioned, there's some questionable inclusions. I think the number one is number 27 on the list, so fairly high up there, is Sweeney Todd from 2007. Now, Sweeney Todd does have some horrific elements. I mean, it's about a barber who murders, you know, his clients, but it's a musical. And on that level, I almost question, well, if that's included, why not include Rocky Horror Picture Show? That's also a musical with horror elements. So that, to me, there were a couple others, but that, to me, was the biggest one to kind of stick out. That is that really deserved to be on the list higher than something like Jaws, Nosferatu, Aliens? Absolutely not.
Now, you said that, there were a couple of mentions on there that were good. Which ones do you think stuck out the most?
Well, I think the top 10 on the list were pretty strong, because it covers a wide variety of horror films that are gory and also not gory. Had films like Psycho, Bride of Frankenstein, Rosemary's Baby, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, King Kong. These are movies that have thrills and scares in them, but aren't particularly bloody. It also has, or gory, they also had other movies in there like Alien, which of course is one of the early, very gory movies. So I thought the top 10 was a really good mix. Although, like I said, The Shining is also in that top 10. But as I said, you know, we're still missing some really key films in the history of horror.
Yeah, I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, like, Night of the Living Dead was number 9. And I don't know, I think that should have been way up higher. I mean, that was the whole basis of where zombies came from. We wouldn't have zombies today if it wasn't for this movie. So shouldn't it be up
You're
higher?
Absolutely right. Yeah, absolutely right. I mean, I'm happy it's at least on the list, considering some other movies aren't on the list. But yes.
Yeah. And King Kong, I don't know. I never considered King Kong to be horror. Like, is that a horror thing? I thought that was like action-adventure. Like, personally, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I think you could argue it's not a horror film. Certainly there are horrific elements to it. Maybe it falls in the same category as Sweeney Todd, where there are elements of horror in it, but people don't really think of it as a horror film. They think, in fact, there's a lot of dramatic aspects to King Kong, especially with the sort of Beauty and the Beast aspect to it. So you're absolutely right. I think that's something that people could argue about, whether or not it actually deserves to be on the list of top horror movies, especially over something like Jaws.
Oh, man, Evil Dead is 21. Evil Dead 2 is 21. Why not Evil Dead the first one? I mean, that's when we all started to see Bruce Campbell. I mean, at least for me, that was the first movie I ever saw him in. And that was actually pretty good. I love those movies.
Yeah, and it's actually head-scratching, because there's other ones that, in my opinion, are ranked too low. Two ones that stood out to me. Number 19 was Halloween. Now, Halloween is a top 10 horror movie. It pretty much jump-started much of the slasher genre that went through the 80s and the early 90s. Everybody knows that theme song to Halloween. It's one of the most chilling songs ever written for a movie. So the fact that it was number 19 and not top 10, I thought was really surprising. Even more surprising was number 25, exactly halfway through the list, was The Exorcist, which to many is the pinnacle of horror. For some people, that's a number one horror film. So for that to be ranked 25 was a bit surprising.
You know, when making a list, what should like a journalist should take into consideration when making a list? Because I'm starting to think, is it kind of biased about what movies that you liked versus what movies kind of really shaped the genre?
Well, this list in particular used the criteria of votes, used the ranking on IMDb, used the critical ranking on Rotten Tomatoes, and the audience ranking on Rotten Tomatoes. So from that aspect, you'd think that it would get a good mix of critical opinion and audience opinion. Except when I was looking at movies like Jaws and Nosferatu, one of the earliest popular horror movies from 1922, both of those movies ranked 8 out of 10 on IMDb, very high, 97% on Rotten Tomatoes, also very high, and had very, very high in the 90s audience rating on Rotten Tomatoes. So you think that those movies, because they were so highly ranked, would automatically be on the list, but they weren't included. So while the list did have a methodology behind it, I kind of question it if those two movies didn't make it on the list. I didn't go through the whole list of all the movies that should have been there. But it made me question it. It said, well, someone ultimately decided Jaws and Nosferatu don't belong on this horror movie list. So who made that decision? And then you're absolutely right. So then biases creep in.
Yeah, because Nosferatu, I could see, you know, that should have been on the list. But Jaws, that's where my biasness comes in, because I don't consider Jaws to be scary at all. Again, this is like another action-adventure movie. Like, if I had known this was a horror movie, I probably wouldn't have watched it.
And there you go. That sort of falls into the King Kong category. Just because a movie has horror elements, does that make it a horror movie? How do you classify it? So you're absolutely right, whereas that's where you and I would probably sit down and say, wait a second, I consider this a horror movie, I don't. And that's where the question lies. So obviously there is some bias that goes into any of these lists.
Hmm. You know, when it comes to franchises now, like you were talking earlier about like how they kind of reboot them, they don't do as well as you think they would do. Why do you think that is?
Part of the issue has to do with, and again, some do very, very well, but part of the issue, I think, is measuring audience expectations. Horror audiences tend to be some of the most loyal audiences to their movies. I mean, there's entire conventions that are devoted to just horror movies. There's a reason why there were so many sequels to Friday the 13th and A Nightmare on Elm Street. People just love these characters, even if some of the movies aren't as great. I mean, even look at a franchise like Leprechaun, which had four or five sequels. It's a pretty silly franchise, but people love that character. And I think one of the big problems is measuring that audience expectation, because you're going to have these loyal fans that want to see the same, you know, something that they recognize from what they love. But you also want to create something new, because there's no reason to create the same thing over again. We saw that in 1998 when Gus Van Sant remade Psycho almost shot for shot. People said, what was the point? And in color, almost shot for shot in color. What was the point? So it's trying to weigh those expectations. And I think a lot of times you're running into trying to draw new fans, the balance of trying to draw new fans and trying to appeal to the old fans. And it's a hard road to travel, because sometimes new fans are just not interested in a guy that wears a hockey mask and kills people. And sometimes old fans want that character to be the exact way he was in 1985. So it's kind of hard to find the right balance.
You're right about that. You know, I started thinking when you said about Leprechaun, do you remember Leprechaun in the Hood? That was,
yes,
that was ridiculous.
It's a ridiculous movie. Technically still a horror movie. But people love that. I mean, they wouldn't have made so many sequels if it wasn't that popular. I mean, they had Leprechaun in space, so, you know.
Oh, in space, that's right. Wasn't there a Jason movie in space?
Yes, Jason X.
Oh, my God. So, you know, going from the 80s, where it was kind of serious, and then it got kind of slapstick towards the end of the franchise, and then when they try to reboot it, it's almost like, hey, we're trying to take this serious again. I don't know why they would go in that direction when the last couple movies of, like, let's say Leprechaun was him in the Hood, and
right.
Now you want him to be all a serious horror character again.
Right.
I'm not sure that the transition can really happen.
Yeah, and you know, it's sort of, and even the original Leprechaun is still pretty ridiculous. I mean, it got more ridiculous as it went on. But there was a recent reboot of Leprechaun that went in a much more horrific direction, and I guess the audience just wasn't there because they liked the humor. You know, so the one aspect of horror movies that people like is sort of that uncomfortable laughter when they see something that's gory / silly. And you gave a great example when you talked about the Friday the 13th movies. So many, especially in the later films, there are a lot of the kills that Jason does that are just ridiculous, and they're funny. And then to try to move that back into something serious sometimes. Well, sometimes the audiences like the humor, and they don't want to see it as you know, they miss that aspect.
Another aspect is the hero aspect. I mean, you get a lot of that in Aliens with a Sigourney Weaver. And it is Sigourney Weaver, right?
Yes.
Okay, just wanted to make sure. I mean, you want to root for them in a horror movie. You need to have somebody to root for. One of them that I remember the most in Nightmare on Elm Street was, I can't remember which one it was, but maybe you can tell me. It was the one where the kid played Dungeons and Dragons a lot, and he, in his dream, he became a wizard. And he eventually died. But it was just the fact that, you know, for every nerd out there, this was like the how he envisioned himself to be the hero. And that's something you don't see a lot of times now. Usually it's like, oh, everybody's dead in the end.
Yeah, I mean, it's very important to kind of to have a human character that connects. And that's why, and bringing up Alien was a great example. That's why Sigourney Weaver's character in Alien, Ripley, is such an amazing character. Not only because she was a female lead, action lead, in a time when that just never existed, hardly ever existed, but also because it's a character that we really care about. And, you know, she's a strong Marine, tough. You know that she can take these aliens. We root for her. And one of the issues that you see in a lot of horror movies is if you don't develop that connection to the humans, why do we care if they get killed, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Another thing is, too, is nowadays you see a lot more ghost and supernatural stuff. Why do you think that is? Like, is it just trends?
Yeah, I think it's very much trends. I mentioned Paranormal Activity a little while back, which was an extremely cheap movie that made, I believe it's neck and neck with Blair Witch for the highest grossing movie on the lowest budget. In terms of box office return, but it's a perfect example of it can be there's a lot of spookier aspects, possession aspects that are popular today, and it's just trends. About a decade ago, a big trend was movies like Saw that were these sort of torture horror movies. That even though we have a new Saw movie coming out in October, that was a trend that kind of faded away, and a lot more sort of ghostly possession movies come up. And again, one joke that's been going around, Stephen King's latest adaptation, It just did phenomenal box office numbers. You know, kind of the jokes that are going around now is now all of a sudden studios are going to wonder who the Stephen King kid is and whether we can make more of his books into movies. Obviously, they've been doing that for 40 years, but it's just sort of the idea that some of these trends come back and forth.
Yeah, you know, that is pretty funny. Who is the Stephen King? I remember they did that with Missy Elliott when I forgot what award she sung at, and everybody was like tweeting out like, oh, who's Missy Elliott? Who's this new person? And it's like she's been out for a very long time. Speaking about things that have been out for a long time, as a franchise that my producer absolutely loves is Phantasm, but I've never actually seen it. Could you explain to me what exactly this movie is?
Yeah, it's definitely the definition of a cult classic, because it has plenty of sequels, but it's one of those it has plenty of sequels, like I said, but they don't. I'm trying to think of the best way to explain it, but you know, it's definitely a cult thing. What was very cool about Phantasm? It was a local independent film, and so that was something that people really connected with. And it's sort of a psychological supernatural film, and it's going to sound weird when I start explaining to it. But again, you watch it, and it all sort of makes sense. It's about an undertaker who turns the dead bodies that come to, you know, his funeral parlor into these zombies that he uses to control to try to take over the world. Sounds a little crazy, and again, it's sort of got a little more crazier as it went on, because there were several sequels that followed. But it's definitely something that is the definition of a cult classic, because people that like Phantasm, they love Phantasm.
Yeah, that's my producer. She can't stop talking about it. She's like, we got to watch him. And I'm like, I don't know. It's because, like you said, when it comes to 80s movies, it starts off like really strong, and then it teeters off at the end of the franchise. At least for me, that's how I feel. Like, it gets kind of like convoluted.
Absolutely.
Just for everybody else who's listening, Phantasm is going to have a 5-movie DVD collection that's coming out September 12th. And I know my producer is going to be the first one out there to grab one.
Excellent. And then you get it and see for yourself if you if this is something you, if you're part of the cult of Phantasm or if you're not.
Yeah, that is so true. You're either in all the way or you're not. Like there's there's no middle ground when it comes to like a lot of cult classics. Well, Chris, thank you so much for joining me. For the people who are listening, where can they find you at?
Sure. You can visit my website, which is chrismckitt.com. That's chrismckitt.com. I'm available at the same Twitter handle as well, at Chris McKitt, chrismckitt.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's masonverapayne.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.